Welcome to the lecture series of Public Theology, a cooperation of the Berlin Institute for Public Theology, the Beyersnaude Center for Public Theology, and the Lutheran World Federation.
So this week we are focusing on the theme of public theology in the Bible, and I can summarize it with a quote from Shelley Rambo's definition of post-dramatic public theology, which she says is holding up hope in the public square amidst the injustice and precariousness of life. So we are focusing today sort of looking at some three characteristics of what can be considered a feminist public theologian, and sort of thinking about that in my own context in South Africa, but also as that relate to the global world also today. And finally, also to note that I am a feminist biblical interpreter, so I will be drawing also some of the work that I've done in my work on the book of Jeremiah, reading it through the lens of feminist and post-colonial biblical interpretation, in a very how this book, in a very traumatizing context of war and displacement, sort of held up a vision of hope in the public square amidst the injustice and precariousness of life. So in the PowerPoint, you will see sort of I have a section on outlining the task and function of the feminist public theologian. And the first task that I sort of highlight is light shining in darkness. Now, in her introduction to a collection of essays on post-dramatic public theology, Shelley Rambo defines the core characteristic of a public theologian as doing theology in a post-traumatic world is to serve as a constructive visionary that is engaged in the process of meaning making. So one could say that the public theologian is living in the world as it is, but is called to imagine the world as to be otherwise, thus helping people to see beyond their current circumstances marred by the effects of violence and injustice. So therefore, I say the first characteristic of a feminist public theologian as constructive visionary is to help people see light in places of darkness. You will see in the PowerPoint, there's a song by Fanny, This Little Light of Mine, which, according to womanist biblical scholar Mitzi Smith, whose work you read this week, describes how the African-American activist Fannie Lou Hamer always sang this song, This Little Light of Mine, throughout the difficult years she and others around her were struggling to challenge unjust structures, even during the time she found herself in jail. According to Smith, this song constitutes for Hamer a counter-narrative confronting the racist ideology that there was nothing good in black people, nothing but darkness. The image of light shining in darkness is compelling as it's both acknowledging the reality of the darkness, but nevertheless, without ceasing, invokes the counter-reality of light that keeps on shining in the dark. This image of light shining in the dark encapsulates for me the feminist public theologian's quest of striving to overcome injustice. Smith writes how This Little Light of Mine since has become a theme song of sorts of womanist biblical scholars in their quest to shine a light on injustice in the biblical texts and in society, so declaring truths that can lighten and enlighten the paths of the most marginalized. So, I found very helpful womanist biblical interpreter's prophetic role, which Smith captures as saying that prophetically, these womanist biblical scholars lower their pens to paper and fingers to keyboards, raise their voices and lift their feet to write and write, to teach and to preach and to sing truth to power, with a goal towards transformation and the dismantling of oppression and oppressive structures towards revolutionary change. So in terms of a feminist biblical interpretation and feminist public theology, I think some of the work done by womanist biblical interpreters in African-American context in the United States is very helpful also for thinking for us as our own public role that is interested in reading biblical texts, not just for the sake of scholarship, but sort of thinking of how the biblical text to develop a biblical hermeneutic that is not only attentive to the marginalized voices in the text, but also find ways to counter those biblical texts that condone slavery, as well as patriarchy, racism, classism, sexism, and imperialism. Hence, reading against the grain and between the lines of the biblical text. So, and also in our South African context, I find their work so important for not only focusing on gender and isolation, but always in terms of class and race. So in the PowerPoint, you will also see an example of Professor Musa Dube as a post-colonial feminist biblical interpretation, as a constructive visionary in how she, throughout her reading the Bible, sort of imagined the world to be otherwise. In 2018, she received an honorary doctorate from Stellenbosch University, and you will see there sort of a quote from her acceptance speech in which she, in the spirit of the prophet Ezekiel, proclaims life in the valley of dry bones. You can see in the PowerPoint also a video of her accepting her award and also some of her speech that shows a great example of theology that has the powerful resources to make a contribution in the public realm, to offer a vision of life amidst death that serves as a counter-narrative that may serve as a source of healing and hope. Now, a second important task of the feminist public theologian that's closely associated with the notion of naming the darkness is to recognize the reality of the deep wounds and the scars caused by systemic racism, sexism, xenophobia, and homophobia, which, if left unattended, may fester and return with a vengeance. In the PowerPoint, you will see also reference to feminist psychologists Maria Ruot and Laura Brown, who has come up with the notion of insidious trauma in order to describe the ongoing and never-ending experience of suffering and dehumanization an individual or group may experience due to one's gender, race, or class. Ruot and Brown speaks about the wounds caused by these traumatizing experiences are often to be found below the surface due to the fact that society and often even the victims themselves may not recognize the damage caused by these ongoing experiences of micro and macroaggression. So a helpful way of explaining this inability to recognize the potentially traumatizing reality of such individuals or groups is the notion of the crooked room used by Shelley Rambo to speak about the long-term effects of systemic racism, which may also be applied to other forms of insidious trauma. The images of the crooked room is Melissa Harris-Penny's way of helping people to understand something of Black women's experience in the United States. According to Harris-Penny, the suffering African-American women have endured and continues to endure by living in a society that's saturated by harmful stereotypes and distortions of reality can be likened to the hidden wounds created by the experience of having to live in a room that's crooked. This analogy has its roots in a psychological experiment that demonstrated that people who are required to sit on crooked chairs in a crooked room eventually began to believe that their situation is normal. As Harris-Penny reminds us, to continually try to stand upright in a room made crooked, thus having to live in a skewed context where one is bombarded with greatly demeaning images of oneself and one's group, may cause long-lasting psychological damage to Black women, as also other women, minorities, and all individuals who find themselves in a situation of insidious trauma. Nevertheless, one does find some brave souls who are willing to challenge the architecture, recognizing for what it is, a distortion of reality, hence a crooked room. So Shelley Rambo speaks, for instance, how the racialized violence in the age of Ferguson and Black Lives Matter is rooted in the deep wounds of the United States' troubling reality, troubling history of race, and an inability to adequately deal with the deep wounds caused by racism. But also in our South African context, one sees these festering wounds caused by apartheid and how it erupts once more with reference to the deeply dehumanizing effects of ongoing poverty. You will see in the PowerPoint references to, for instance, Nkosi Gola, who with great passion and anger speaks about shit theology concerning the crude infringement of basic human rights, with only 300 toilets for thousands of inhabitants in the informal settlements of Guguletu and Khayelitsha, with numerous women and children being raped and murdered while going to relieve themselves at night. as well as a quote in the PowerPoint regarding in times of Open Stellenbosch and Fees Must Fall, where some of the students speak about how they can't breathe in terms of the reality of systemic racism and sexism. A feminist public theology is thus concerned with facing the world with all its crookedness and helping to name the wounds below the surface. That's the first step in changing the reality. In terms of womanist biblical scholars, it's also the notion, the courage to say it as it is. Mitzi Smith speaks about womanist biblical scholars engaging in prophetic truth-telling at the risk of annoying the power brokers, at the risk of being demonized. Moreover, this act of naming the wounds should also go deeper than merely focusing on one level of injustice. An intersectional understanding of gender requires that one not only challenges the systemic nature of sexism, but also consider how it intersects with systemic racism and the devastating effects of poverty. That includes attention to factors such as globalization, colonization, and capitalism that collectively cause those who are most vulnerable to suffer even more. A third important task of the feminist public theologian that's deeply rooted in the ability to imagine the world to be otherwise is to actively engage what Shelley Rambo calls wound work, that is going beyond merely surfacing the wounds, but also attending to the wounds by means of touching, cleaning, and applying balm with the distinct purpose of healing. In this regard, one could say that the feminist public theologian is to journey with those in pain, to hear the other into speech, thus in a shared vulnerability to acknowledge the other's reality. There are examples in our South African context, including Mercy Ambo Oyedieu or Denise Ackermans, have set profound examples by calling the people of this traumatized land to lament the deep wounds left by HIV/AIDS, by the atrocities of the cruel apartheid regime, by the great inequality between rich and poor that seems to be growing bigger by the day. I love what Shelley Rambo speaks about the healing ministry of touch and being touched, as exemplified in Jesus' numerous acts of moving closer and touching the wounds of the most undesirables, the lepers and the woman who bled all the time, sort of in a bold act that once more reinscribed value to what had been constantly and blatantly devalued. To touch the wounds caused by racism, sexism, homophobia, and poverty is thus rooted what Rambo describes as the vision of fierce care that affirms the inherent goodness of bodies. The touching of the wounds that signals an unwavering commitment to life itself in context of ongoing dehumanization and devaluation. So in this notion is also the reality, again, what Shelley Rambo has spoken about, the notion of hope, to be able to look, help people to look differently from the sight of ruins. It's to help individuals and groups to cultivate new capacities for imagining life, drawing on values such as compassion, justice, resistance, and resilience. But nevertheless, understanding how deep some of these scars, the wounds of the caused by the life-defining forces of poverty, HIV/AIDS, racism, sexism, or homophobia, is so deep that some of these wounds never go away. However, the hope is that through the healing that comes through attentive, caring touch that involves cleaning and applying antibacterial ointment that prevents further infection, that the wounds may eventually turn into scars. As Rambo reminds us, the scar marks suffering and healing, but does not do so by inscribing the memory of suffering by leaving a mark. In the rest of the readings that you are doing today, I show then from the book of Jeremiah something of this wound work, that notion in terms of the prophet having to deal with the incredible trauma and the violence of imperial violence and what has done to the people. How the prophet, Kathleen O'Connor, speaks about the prophet as doing the life-saving works of a preacher, poet, theologian. He looks at his people's situation, he lives among them and sees their world. He names it, he reframes it by imaginatively in reinventing traditions they share. This interpretive work rebuilds them into a people. So you will see in the article that you will also read this week regarding systemic violence in Jeremiah 4-6, the notion of uncovering the wounds in Jeremiah in terms of the Babylonian empires, the imperial violence portrayed in this book. But also the systemic nature of that, how factors such as class and gender, ethnicity, is responsible for structural violence that inflicting also for wounds that threaten the health of the entire community. One sees also the slow violence of poverty and injustice, and how this also comes into play in the book underneath the imperial violence that the Babylonian Empire has caused to destroy the people. But then also how one finds in Jeremiah some very troubling images of that employs violence against a female body in order to portray the reality and effects of imperial violence. One foresees, for instance, a very disturbing example in Jeremiah 13:22, when the metaphor of rape is used in order to describe the violent acts of breaking down the city's walls, entering the city and her building. So in terms of a feminist biblical interpreter, as a public theologian, how important it is to name these examples of violence in the book, but how it's also important to find ways to bind up the wounds in the book of Jeremiah. And I draw then on the work of Carolyn Sharp, who speaks about names two strategies for responding to the manifold description of violence in the book of Jeremiah. And the first is lament, the notion also of lament as resistance, the lament also to say what is, who's vulnerable, who's lost, and also to decline to be complicit in the erasure of pain and brokenness from communal memory. And we see then in the book of Jeremiah how lament is such an important notion. That's also, I've also highlighted in the article, that's sort of additional reading in terms of the wailing woman, the key nurse, as a way of resisting also violence. But then a second strategy that Sharp highlights is the notion of transgression that forms such an important role of the feminist biblical interpreter who embraces a public theological role. It's the commitment of reading otherwise, of reading against the grain of the text. Sharp defines transgression as the privileging of creative interventions, ancient and contemporary, that resist or reframe destructive societal norms. So once again, so as we are trying to figure out how to deal with the inequality in our own country, you will see in the PowerPoint also this notion of unequal scenes where Stellenbosch is right next to Kayamandi Township, and you see sort of how the wealthiest of the wealthy live in sort of right next to the poorest of the poor. Also in my country, which sexual violence against female bodies is rampant. South Africa has been called the rape capital of the world. But how sort of the biblical text, also the way it depicts sexual violence, how one has to resist any instance of where violence is normalized. But then in the final instance of how the public theologian, the feminist public theologian, is there to imagine hope and bring about visions of hope and restoring health amidst the people, healing the wounds, which is focus found in the midst of the book of Jeremiah. And it inspires us also that this hope of healing and peace held up by the prophet may inspire people to face the reality with new vigor, so as to name what should be fixed, to mend what is broken, and to strive to embrace values such as justice, equality, human dignity, compassion, and love. Thank you.